Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 13th of May 2025. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Elizabeth Dell and Sophia Prush-Otherman, who is joining the Ox Talk team as a new reader volunteer. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 05:14 on Monday 12th of May to 05:05 on Sunday 18th of May. And the sunset times this week will range from 20:47 on Monday 12th of May to 20:56 on Sunday, 18th of May.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
A dog walker said he was left feeling concerned after a huge python was seen at an Oxford beauty spot. The man, who was asked not to be identified, saw the massive serpent while walking his pet at Port Meadow on Tuesday, April the 29th. A shirtless man wearing swimming trunks was standing in the water at the main bathing area in the outdoor space. Photographs show what looks to be a large python wrapped around his torso, which has since sparked concern amongst dog walkers. It's not the first time those living in the city have been on alert due to a snake in public. Back in July of last year, a warning was made to citizens in the form of a poster which was spotted attached to a lamppost. The poster featured a photograph of a cobra and said, "Attention, missing snake, highly venomous, do not approach."
A change of leadership has taken place at the Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire Community Rail Partnerships, CRPs, as the organisations enter a new chapter. John Harris, the founding chair of the CRP Community Interest Company, has stepped down from his leadership role. Kevin Harris, CEO of Constructing Excellence Southwest and director of Time for Strategy, has been appointed to lead the Community Interest Company into its next stage of development. The Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire CRPs, founded in 2020 and 2023 respectively, has established themselves as drivers of sustainable travel, community connection, and place-based insight and regeneration. They have delivered award-winning high-impact initiatives, including the Gloucestershire Black History Map and Access to Nature programmes, Oxfordshire's Moving Murals exhibitions, and the launch of Train Tripper, a digital carbon savings tool. John Harris, with a background in transport planning and a deep commitment to supporting young people, the inclusion of disabled people, and developing local communities, has been key in building the foundations of both partnerships. While John steps down as chair, he will continue to be involved with the delivery of GoCRP projects, supporting the organisation, local community and continued success of the rail partnerships. Succeeding John is Kevin Harris, who has a strong track record in the private sector, particularly across the built environment. He brings a fresh perspective and is focused on supporting the organisation's growth into a more mature, resilient and future-facing structure. He said, "I'm excited to contribute to the incredible work already happening across the CRPs. These partnerships have shown what's possible when communities are empowered and transport is made more inclusive. My goal is to help drive forward a strong, sustainable and impactful future." The Community Interest Company now oversees a growing portfolio of community rail activity across both counties and nationally, using the power of rail to unlock economic opportunity and address climate goals and connect people with place.
Members of a care home gardening club have been busy shopping for plants. Residents and staff from Southern Down Care Home in Chipping Norton visited B&Q in Banbury to choose plants for the home's courtyard. Shilpa Nair, the home's general manager, said, "We absolutely love being able to take our residents out and about to visit garden centres. It makes us so happy for our gardening club to decide what they would like to plant in our outdoor areas. It's been a fantastic day and we've all thoroughly enjoyed ourselves."
Members of the public have the chance to share their views on which projects should benefit from a community fund to be set up should controversial plans for a vast Oxfordshire solar farm be approved. As the Planning Inspectorate prepares to begin its examination of the Botley West solar farm, developers Photovolt Development Partners are inviting local residents to put forward ideas and proposals for how the community fund should be deployed and individual projects the fund should support. The solar farm would be the largest in Europe, covering 15 parishes within 3,450 acres of land near Botley, Woodstock and Kidlington, which is mostly owned by Blenheim Estates. The fund, which will be established upon the project being built, is designed to provide ongoing support to local community initiatives. Photovolt has said how this fund is allocated should be guided by the people and communities it's designed to serve. Residents who have ideas and suggestions for how the community fund is deployed should send them to info@botleywest.co.uk. Discussions are currently ongoing with Oxfordshire community organisations, non-profits and the relevant local authorities about how the fund will operate. Photovolt said it's looking to find the right balance between the community's desire for reduced energy bills directly resulting from the project and the role of the fund in supporting local initiatives. Mark Owen Lloyd, director of Botley West Solar Farm, said, "From upgrading community facilities to expanding youth programmes to sustainability initiatives and skills training, we want to hear what matters most to Oxfordshire residents. This is your opportunity to help shape lasting local benefits. We're committed to ensuring that this fund works for everyone. Your views will prove vital to the final structure and operation of what will be a long-standing source of financial benefit to communities across the county." Representing an £800 million investment in Oxfordshire, the Botley West Solar Farm is set to add considerable renewable energy capacity to the county. As well as contributing to Oxfordshire's drive to net zero, the development includes plans to help alleviate fuel poverty, boost food security and support the local economy. The project will also dedicate approximately 1,235 acres, around one-third of the total site, to non-panel areas. These fields will be used for community-led food-growing projects in partnership with local social enterprises. However, concerns have been raised over the loss of greenbelt land, the fact the site would be so close to people's homes, the impact on farming land, and the impact on the heritage site of Blenheim.
A £600 million theme park that's proposing to build a site in North Oxfordshire is holding an event for hoteliers this month. Puy de Fou, which is an historical award-winning park with no rides, is proposing to build a site near to Junction 10 of the M40 on land north of Bucknell near Bicester. Earlier this year, a public consultation was launched which outlined details of the development and a master plan. A planning application is set to be submitted to Cherwell District Council in the coming months, and if approved, it could be built by 2029. Ahead of the submission, Puy de Fou is hosting a Q&A event at the Randolph Hotel in Oxford. This will take place on May the 15th from noon until 2 p.m. and is a free event, open to all hoteliers and accommodation providers in and around Oxfordshire. David Nguyen, Chief International Development Officer at Puy de Fou, will present the concept of the proposed development in Oxfordshire, with a focus on short and long-term development plans for accommodation on the site. He'll also explain how other local hotels and accommodation may benefit from staying visitors to Puy de Fou.
Plans to add two new flats to a block in Didcot have been approved despite a scathing assessment from a local councillor. County Councillor Ian Snowden expressed his fears as plans to increase the number of flats from 4 to 6 at a building in Wantage Road were approved by a planning committee. The scheme, submitted by Serenify Solutions Limited, will see the block have 5 one-bed flats and 1 two-bed flat. Mr. Snowden raised a number of concerns about its design and the amount of amenity space included. Speaking to South Oxfordshire District Council's planning committee, he said this design is not great. In fact, it's not good at all. Yes, it's better than what's there. Even the CGI isn't great, so I despair at what the finished look will be. This is completely out of character for the area. When I first joined this council, we took pride in that new dwellings weren't just rabbit hutches and that residents would not just have somewhere to sleep, but somewhere to live. Now it seems minimum amenity standards are only mentioned in the report to tell residents what they could have had. This application only has amenity space for one of the apartments and it's communal. There are enough reasons for you to refuse this application. Didcot Town Council also raised concerns. Denise MacDonald, Town Council member, said Didcot Town Council is not opposed to the extra provision of 1 and 2 bedroom apartments and actually welcomes such additions to the town. However, we felt building 2 extra apartments at this site was just too much. Although residential, the site is on a very busy corner. The application itself has 2 retail units and a petrol station nearby. Therefore, there are lots of traffic movements in this small area. This application will impact the ability for people to park to use the retail units. Ifti Maniar, the application's agent, said, "The application site is a previously underutilised plot in a built-up area. There will be no loss of retail space or parking spaces. This would not result in overdevelopment of the site. In such locations, intensification of residential use is acceptable. It would result in a better quality of accommodation." The District Council's planning officers recommended it be approved. In their report, it said, "The development proposes the reconfiguration and extension of the existing building to provide 2 additional flats in a highly sustainable location with good access to services, transport and open space. The development also creates amenity space for both existing and proposed units and upgrades existing substandard accommodation to meet current day's minimums in terms of floor space." The committee voted in favour of approval.
An archaeological dig in Oxfordshire has unearthed historic artefacts spanning 6,000 years, including from the Roman and Bronze Ages. The 2015 excavation took place at Tame Meadows in Tame and preceded the building of 203 new homes on the site. Undertaken by Oxford Cotswold Archaeology, OCA, the work revealed artefacts and evidence of continuous settlement ranging across 6,000 years, from the early Neolithic, Bronze, Iron, Roman and early medieval periods. Amongst other finds, the OCA excavation revealed early Neolithic pits and a three-circuit causewayed enclosure, possibly one of the largest known in the UK. Later prehistoric activity included an extensive early Iron Age settlement, revealing structures and pits, some containing deposits of material involving pottery, animal remains and other finds. A small cemetery included the remains of at least 13 people, a reminder that these settlements were not just places of work and production, but homes to real people. Late Iron Age fields were replaced during the early Roman period. The OCA field team found a larger scale land division related to agriculture, which was reflected in finds of millstones and corn dryers. In the 6th and 7th centuries AD, a settlement comprising 13 sunken featured buildings was established. They contained loom weights used in textile weaving, telling of a community that featured hard-working weavers. In the late Saxon period, a ditched enclosure revealed ovens that provided sustenance through crop drying and malting as the town of Thame began to rise. These discoveries have revealed a rich and layered history lies beneath the fields near modern Thame, with its agricultural roots still reflected in the landscape today. The cataloguing of the many artefacts discovered by the OCA field team has taken a few years, but now at last they can be displayed to the public. An exhibition devoted to a range of the artefacts, A Day in the Life, is being held over the summer at Thame Museum, opening on Saturday, May the 24th. Chris Ellis, Senior Project Officer at OCA and co-director of the excavations, will be giving an illustrated talk about the findings at the Players Theatre, Thame, on Sunday, May the 25th. He will explain why Thame Meadows was such an important site, describe the findings from each era, and outline how it's thought people lived in those times. Chris said, "In my 35 years as an archaeologist, the Thame excavations were a career high point, both for the surprises in the everyday discoveries as well as the sheer longevity and range of ancient community activities represented. To encounter this amount of archaeology on just one development site is almost unheard of."
Fears of an imminent volcanic eruption in Bolivia have been alleviated by researchers from the University of Oxford. A team from the Department of Earth Sciences, in collaboration with the University of Science and Technology of China and Cornell University, have been studying Bolivia's zombie volcano, Uturungu. By combining seismology, physics models and rock composition analysis, they've identified the causes of Uturungu's unrest and concluded an eruption is unlikely. Having last erupted 250,000 years ago, Uturungu is technically dead, but was dubbed a zombie volcano because it still shows signs of unrest, including earthquakes and gas plumes. This unrest causes a sombrero pattern of deformation, with the land in the centre of the volcanic system rising and the surrounding areas sinking. For the local population, it's crucial to assess the potential start and severity of an eruption from Uturungu, which could cause widespread damage and threat to life. However, until now, there was no explanation for the continued volcanic unrest. The new study used signals detected from more than 1,700 earthquake events to perform high-resolution imaging of the plumbing system in the shallow crust beneath the volcano. According to the findings, the unrest of Uturungu is due to the movement of liquid and gas beneath the crater, with a low likelihood of an imminent eruption. Volcanic plumbing systems are a complex mixture of fluids and gases in magmatic reservoirs and hydrothermal systems. Previous studies have shown Uturungu sits above the world's highest
sits above the world's largest known magma body in the Earth's crust, the Altiplano Puna volcanic complex, and that an active hydrothermal system connects this body and the surface. However, it was unknown how fluids may be moving through this underground system. The research team used seismic tomography, a way of imaging the interior of the volcano, similar to methods used in medieval imaging of the human body. Seismic waves travel at different speeds through different materials, thereby providing insights into the inner workings of Uturungu in three dimensions. They combined this with analysis of the physical properties of the system, including rock composition, to better understand the volcanic system. This analysis picked out possible upward migration pathways of geothermally heated fluids and showed how liquids and gases accumulate in reservoirs directly below the volcano's crater. The research team believed this is the most likely cause for the deformation in the centre of the volcanic system, and the risk of a real eruption is low.
BMW has made the difficult decision to axe 180 workers from its mini plant in Oxford. The company has opted to end agency staff contracts at the city's factory in Cowley amid the uncertainty of heightened United States tariffs. US President Donald Trump announced a 25% tariff would be levied on car imports back in March, which affected all the vehicles imported to America from abroad. The reasoning was the hope that car makers would be forced to invest in production within the US, but the effects are already hitting the British automobile industry hard. Oxford's mini plant has been running at under capacity for the past 5 years, with reports stating that the 2024 production was at 110,000. This is compared with 234,000 recorded at the Cowley's Spots peak in 2018. When we asked the company on the jobs cuts, a spokesperson for BMW said, "Temporary work is one of the ways that companies can respond flexibly to the high volatility of the global economy. The BMW Group needs lasting flexibility, which is achieved among other measures by using temporary workers. This means that the number of temporary workers employed can fluctuate over time. While this is always a difficult decision, the recent adjustment to temporary staffing levels at Mini Plant Oxford was a long-planned measure to align our workforce with current business requirements." Oxford East MP Annalise Dodds has raised concerns over the impact of tariffs on the Cowley company in Parliament. She said, "BMW Cowley is critical for our city, for local jobs and for the wider economy. Tariffs increase uncertainty for all of the UK automotive sector. In total, there are more than 3,500 workers at the factory, and the company asserts these staff were temporary and this type of role is used to manage production fluctuations. It's not the first time in recent years that groups of staff have had contracts terminated at the Oxford location. Previously, in September 23, it was revealed that BMW had told a number of workers at the Cowley plant they would be losing their jobs. As the car manufacturer is moving to a different shift pattern, it phased out old vehicle models, and it was understood that the job losses were among temporary staff." A spokesperson for BMW at the time said, "We're in the process of phasing out our current models and building up to new ones next year, which is normal. This means that we will be producing fewer cars than usual for a period, and so we need to move to a different shift pattern. As a result, some of our temporary staff have been stood down."
A teenage driver who killed three school friends in a horror crash was heard in a video boasting about his driving skills. A court heard Edward Spencer, 18, had a cavalier attitude towards driving and shared Snapchat videos of him boasting about being able to drive like a D-star head once he'd passed his test. He also filmed LED lights in his car interior and joked, "It's disco time," and bragged about reversing so fast that he was going to crash. Spencer, who attended Chipping Camden School in the Cotswolds, lost control of his Ford Fiesta while driving home from school just 5 weeks after passing his test. He was travelling at 64 miles per hour when he ploughed into a Fiat 500 coming in the opposite direction on the B4035 near Shipston, Warwickshire, on April the 21st, 2023. His passengers, Harry Purcell, 17, Matilda Tilly Seacombe, 16, and Frank Wormald, 16, were airlifted to hospital but died. Two children, aged 10 and 12, who were travelling in the Fiat with their stepmother and another teenager, suffered life-changing injuries in the crash. Spencer appeared at Warwick Crown Court, where he admitted causing death by careless or inconsiderate driving. The teenager of Newbold-on-Stour also pleaded guilty to three counts of causing serious injury by careless or considerate driving. Sentencing, Judge Andrew Lockhard, KC, said, "It's of note that no one walked away from this collision unhurt. I also note that others who came to the scene had to deal with a scene of utter devastation. It's the cross that you will have to bear. I make it clear that any sentence cannot put a value on any one of the lives of the children who died. All of these children, in my judgment, were true exemplars of the very best that our community has to offer." Judge Lockhart told the court how video footage found online and on Tilly's Snapchat account showcased the defendant's cavalier attitude to driving. He added, "It's disturbing material and seriously aggravates your position." Tony Purcell recovered a number of clips saved from Snapchat. These clips showcased your cavalier attitude for dangerous driving. The judge described one clip in which Spencer told one friend, "So when I reverse really fast, I'm going to crash and it's going to fly down. It doesn't fast go fast on gravel." He added, "There was a terrible inevitability to what was going to happen on April the 21st. It was 3.5 miles before the collision that your car was caught on CCTV. It's clear from that footage your car is significantly speeding. A careful driver would have realised the risks on driving on rural roads with bends and undulations. At the point when you lost control, there is a chevron. A competent driver would have braked on the approach to this bend. I note that the national speed limit is 60 miles per hour and it's applicable to this stretch of road. I further note that this is a limit, not a target. I am clear that it would have been an act of pure folly to drive 60 miles per hour through these bends. This was a road you knew, with hazards you knew, that knowledge did not cause you to slow down. At the right-hand bend, you lost control of your car into the oncoming Fiat 500. It swerved onto the grass verge and you couldn't control your car, and it presented its near onside to the oncoming car. None could or did survive such a disaster. That impact was enormous. This was a collision fueled by an irresponsible and inexperienced driver who'd been warned in the weeks before. Spencer had denied causing death by careless or considerate driving, but changed his pleas to guilty on March the 17th this year. The teenager also admitted three counts of causing serious injury by careless or inconsiderate driving. He was sentenced to 24 months behind bars and banned from driving for 8 years at Warwick Crown Court on April the 28th. A community group opposed to the construction of the largest solar farm in Europe has said solar panels belong on roofs, not on fields of productive arable land. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to announce new requirements for house builders to install solar panels on the roofs of new properties by 2027, according to several media outlets. The government will also offer existing homeowners greater loans and grants to install solar panels on their homes. This latest pledge has led a community action group to question whether the Botley West solar farm should go ahead. The £800 million project is set to cover 3,450 acres of land near Botley, Woodstock and Kidlington, which is mostly owned by Blenheim. Professor Alex Rogers, chairman of the Stop Botley West Community Group, said it is right new homes should be prioritised over farmland. The Stop Botley West campaign's consistent message has been that solar panels belong on roofs, not on fields of productive arable land. The Professor of Computer Science at University of Oxford, one of the leaders of the campaign, added that the group was certain that rooftops and brownfield sites provided enough space for the area's solar energy generation. Meanwhile, the developer Photovolt said that though solar generation through rooftops is important, projects like Botley West remain vital. Mark Owen Lloyd, director, said, "The fact remains that utility-scale solar projects like Botley West are essential to achieving solar power targets. Rooftop solar alone cannot meet those targets."
More than £209,000 has been invested in accessibility improvements at the Riverside in Wallingford. The work has included improvements to the existing access path, roadway, ramp and moorings at the Riverside. An accessible pontoon has also been installed, designed for river lovers with a disability. The improvements have been designed to be step-free, providing easy access for people of all disabilities. The project, managed by South Oxfordshire District Council, has been supported by Wallingford Accessible Boat Club. The facility meets the requirements of the boat club's wheelie boat, WOW 1, enabling disabled and less mobile people to have equal access to the river. The site also includes a wheelchair accessible cabin with access to water and electricity, and there are plans to create artwork on the cabin to brighten up the area. A changing places accessible bathroom has also been created at the Riverside, next to the existing toilet facilities. The completion of the work coincides with the summer opening of the Riverside site. The campsite opened at the beginning of May, and the outdoor pool and splash pad will follow later this month. Councillor Sam James Laurie, South Oxfordshire District Council Cabinet Member for the Environment, said, "This May we are celebrating the opening of the new accessible moorings and all the related improvements at the Riverside. Alongside the moorings and better path access, I'm delighted we've been able to include a changing places at this site. Our latest improvements further enhance the location as a destination within the district. I'm also pleased we're in a position to make the facilities more accessible so everyone can benefit from our beautiful Riverside. We've already put significant funding in recent years into the campsite, pool, toilet, wash facilities and a fabulous makeover of our splash pads, which improved incredibly popular in the last two seasons." John Jenkins, chairman of Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, said, "This is a truly wonderful moment for our club. We've been working with South Oxfordshire District Council on this project for almost 5 years. The facilities at Riverside, complete with adjoining car parking, easy access down to the water and our wheelie boat, WOW 1, will enable us to offer more river trips to more disabled and elderly people so they can enjoy the wonders of the river just as able-bodied people do. I really hope the combination of our wheelie boat service and this superb facility will help attract visitors to Wallingford to underline it as the river town it truly is."
9 new flats planned for a busy Oxford Road have been turned down over a flooding risk. The plan was submitted to replace SD Timo Car Sales in Abingdon Road with the new two-storey building. The applicant, Mark Avery, said in the planning documents that the scheme would set a high standard for future development in the vicinity. It was an outline planning application for the development. It was an outline planning application for the demolition of the existing car dealership, workshop and two flats to replace them with the new building. The scheme also included car parking, bin and cycle storage, as well as alterations to landscaping. However, Oxford City Council planning officers have refused the application using delegated powers. In the planning officer's decision report, it said the proposed development lies within the functional floodplain. Policy RE3, the Oxford Local Plan 2036, states that planning permission will not be granted for development in flood zone 3B except where it's for water compatible uses or essential infrastructure, or where it's on previously developed land and meets listed criteria to reduce flood risk. In this case, the submitted flood risk assessment fails to demonstrate that the development would not increase flood risk on or off the site, and safe access and egress in the event of a flood cannot be provided. On this basis, the development does not meet the necessary criteria set out in policy RE3 to be considered acceptable in principle. It added, the development poses an unacceptable risk of pollution to surface water quality. This development will connect to Oxford Sewage Treatment Works, STW. In addition, the Thames River Basin Management Plan requires the restoration enhancement of water bodies to prevent deterioration and promote recovery of water bodies. The application fails to demonstrate specifically in the form of an appropriate foul water strategy how it would respond to the requirements of providing adequate drainage and not lead to an adverse impact on water quality in the Thames and its tributaries. The proposed development has failed to demonstrate that the scheme makes the best use of the site's capacity to maximise its potential to deliver housing, including affordable housing, through exploring all available opportunities in a manner compatible with both the site itself and the surrounding area. The Environment Agency objected, saying, in the absence of an acceptable flood risk assessment, FRA, we object to this application and recommend that planning permission is refused. The proposed development site lies within an area of high flood risk. The scheme received 4 supporting comments, 2 objections and 2 comments, neither in support or objection.
2 distraction thefts have sparked a police CCTV appeal in Wallingford. The incidents happen in St Martin Street and the area of Reading Road and St John's Road on April the 3rd and April the 15th, between 3 and 3:15 on each occasion. The Thames Valley Police Assessment and Investigation Unit has been investigating the incident and secured CCTV images which have now been released to the public. A distraction theft is a crime in which someone steals something from another person after tricking them into giving their attention to something else. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "We believe the people pictured may have vital information and would ask that they or anyone who knows them to come forward. Anyone with information should call 101. The 4 spokespersons added, "If you or someone you know believes they may have been a victim of such an incident, please make a report to the police."
Crews remained at the scene of a major fire which involved fly-tipped tyres for hours last Thursday. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service sent 4 fire crews to the village of Bradwell near Burford shortly after 7:30 p.m. the previous day. Fire engines were sent from Burford, Carterton and Farringdon fire stations and a water carrier vehicle from Wheatley Fire Station, with relief crews then sent throughout the night to Bradwell, Grove, Burford to tackle the major fire. The fire service said the fire involved a large pile of disused tyres that had been fly-tipped, with crews remaining on the scene throughout the day. Fire crews continued to use large volumes of water to extinguish the fire and cool the remaining tyres to prevent reignition. The landowner has been arranging mechanical assistance and the cause of the fire is currently unknown. The smoke being generated from the fire has significantly reduced, the fire service said on Thursday morning. Only when pockets of fire flare up due to moving the tyre stack to extinguish hotspots is when more smoke is being produced. The fire service advised householders to close their windows and doors on Wednesday evening, but this advice was then eased off the following day as the smoke had been contained. The road was reopened to traffic on Thursday morning. The victim of modern slavery at the hands of an Oxfordshire High Court and United Nations judge said she finds it extremely difficult to meet new people after being subjected to immigration offences. She was speaking after Lydia Mugambe, aged 50, of Lyne Road, Kidlington, was jailed for 6 years and 4 months at Oxford Crown Court. This was in addition to a restraining order and compensation of £12,160, which has been awarded to the victim. The victim, who was held as a slave at her then address in Brasenose Drive, Kidlington, has spoken to police about her trauma after the sentencing. The victim, who has an anonymity for life, said, "My existence to Lydia was not important. At first, life was not bad. Lydia promised me things and I believed her. But in a short time, things changed and she did not do as she had promised. She made me feel unhappy as I couldn't speak to her as I feared her." Even after the police had visited her house on first occasion, Lydia told me she had the authority and that she would burn my passport and bank card. She also said she would call the police because I was in the UK illegally. I was fearful and worried. I was asking for God to help me. I should have been treated humanely, not treated as useless or worthless. I now find it extremely difficult to introduce myself to people. If anyone asks me questions, I'm very wary. I'm hoping for good things in the future. Everyone in the UK has freedom to speak and people are respected. Thames Valley Police had established that Mugambe had obtained a visa for the victim to work in the UK. Commander for Oxfordshire, Chief Superintendent Ben Clark, said Lydia Mugambe is an extremely qualified lawyer, a Ugandan High Court judge and a UN Criminal Tribunal judge. As such, there is no doubt that she knew she was committing offences. Modern slavery is an underreported crime, and I hope that the bravery of the victim in this case encourages other victims of modern slavery to come forward. If you're a victim or have information about modern slavery, then please contact Thames Valley Police. We will listen and we will help you. You can contact us by visiting a police station, leaving details via our website, or by calling 101. The trial of Mugambe took place in February and March at Oxford Crown Court this year, where a jury found her guilty on 4 counts.
Leila Moran MP says she is delighted to announce the birth of her first child with her partner. The Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon said the baby was born at the John Radcliffe Hospital and is doing really well. Ms Moran announced she was in a relationship with the former Lib Dem media chief Rosie Cobb in January 2020. She will be taking parental leave for approximately 5 months, and during this time, her office will remain open for all casework. A proxy vote will be in place to ensure Oxford West and Abingdon constituents are represented in Parliament. The Health and Social Care Select Committee will be ably shepherded by Paulette Hamilton MP, the Vice-Chair of the committee, to whom Ms Moran is extremely grateful. Ms Moran said, "In this moment of joy for our family, I want to thank the NHS staff who are taking such good care of us. I also want to thank in advance my amazing parliamentary and campaign staff, the clerks of the Select Committee, and my fellow MPs for supporting me in taking parental leave. Finally, thanks to those who've sent their good wishes. We feel blessed indeed." Ms Moran was elected in 2017 and was the Lib Dems Foreign Affairs spokesperson between 2020 and 2024. She lost out to Sir Ed Davey in the race to become the new leader of the Liberal Democrats in 2020.
Families who lived in former wooden army huts at Slade Camp in Oxford are determined to keep their memories alive. The former military barracks of Horsepath Driftway and the Slade at Headington provided much-needed housing for dozens of people after the Second World War. Now members of the Shotover Preservation Society have put forward a series of ideas to make sure the joy of having somewhere to live, if not ideal, is not forgotten. Chairman Jim Woods tells me, "We're in the process of applying for a heritage lottery grant to add photographic signs in the camp, collect more oral histories, write a small book, make a short film, and create a website. Fingers crossed we get it." The Society is holding a meeting at Bullingdon Community Centre in Pete Moors on Saturday, May the 17th from 4 p.m, where members will hear talks from historian Maurice East and former residents and share photographs and memories. As we've recalled, the huts stood around a parade ground and were part of the Army's Infantry Training Centre No. 16 during the war. A large part of the site was what we now know as Brasenose Wood. Although the huts have long gone, 4 of the 9 numbered avenues, 1st, 4th, 8th and 9th, still exist. Mr Wood said, "Slade Camp played an important role in helping people who were in difficult circumstances at the end of the war to put their lives back together. It's an inspiring story and more people should know about it. The Society are planning to hold a photograph exhibition at the Westgate Library in Oxford in September. Everyone is welcome to attend the meeting, although those wishing to hear the talks, space is restricted, should email sps@shotoverpreservation.uk.
A 101-year-old former paratrooper has recalled coming across a pile of bodies in a Nazi concentration camp on VE Day. While millions across Europe celebrated as the guns fell silent on May 8, 1945, Peter Belcher, a British paratrooper, was witnessing the horrors of Nazi Germany. Already a veteran of the D-Day landings, Mr. Belcher was stationed near the Baltic coast in May 1945, where his unit met Russian troops advancing from the east. Near them was a railway line running into the woodland, used by one of the hundreds of concentration camps the Nazi regime had set up. Mr. Belcher, who served with the 2nd Battalion Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry, part of the 6th Airborne Division, said, "We actually went to a nearby concentration camp, and there were two survivors still in there. They just didn't believe, because the gates were open and nobody about, that they could just walk out. There was a pile of bodies. There was a pit already dug, and the bodies were literally skin and bone piled high. The next day or two after, we got the village people and took them to give them a burial." Originally from Devizes in Wiltshire, Mr. Belcher said VE Day meant relief, adding, "As a whole, you said, thank God it's over." He's among the 60 or so veterans who live at Broughton House Veterans Care Village in Salford, Greater Manchester, which has looked after more than 8,000 veterans since it first opened its doors in 1916. Another resident, Jean Mack, 92, was born in Putney, London, and joined the Royal Navy aged 21. She remembers the war ending as a teenager growing up in Worthing, East Sussex. She said, "I presumed it was over simply because all the adults, they all seemed to be going mad about something and dancing everywhere. There was a big, I think it was an air raid shelter at the end of our road, and there was a piper. How he got up there, I don't know. Complete in his kilt, marching round and round the top of there." Reg Mitchell, 91, from Twickenham, London, remembers the capital being devastated by the Blitz when Germany's victory and invasion of Britain seemed inevitable. Mr. Mitchell, who served with the RAF for 25 years before retiring as a flight lieutenant, said, "We lived in the house which had a cellar, and as kids we spent the first years on the steps of the cellar every night. It was endless, you know. Although they were getting it in the East End, we were getting the noise almost every night. We virtually lived in the cellar."
Members of the public were invited to join a tame care home in celebrating the 80th anniversary of VE Day. Cuttlebrook Hall hosted a 1940s themed street party on Thursday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. The event commemorated the end of the Second World War in Europe, which was announced by Sir Winston Churchill on May 8, 1945. The announcement sparked nationwide celebrations, with people taking to the streets for spontaneous parties. Cuttlebrook Hall's event featured food, entertainment and dancing, all in the spirit of the 1940s. The day's festivities also included a live performance of wartime music and a talk by Tame Museum about life during World War II and the significance of VE Day. Visitors received gift bags containing popular sweets from the 1940s. Alana Kaur, home manager at Cuttlebrook Hall, said, "Here at Cuttlebrook Hall, we're thrilled to be marking the 80th anniversary of VE Day with the help of the community, and especially delighted to be welcoming Tame Museum for the occasion. We know this is a very important milestone for residents and are looking forward to having the opportunity to learn more about this poignant period. On behalf of the whole team, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all interested in coming along for what we anticipated will be an informative and enriching day full of celebration."
The Green Party was among the success stories in Oxfordshire County Council's local elections, after more than doubling their share of seats. The party made gains across the county, including in Oxford itself, increasing the number of Green councillors from 3 to 7. The Lib Dems also had huge success in the election, winning their first ever majority on the county council with 36 councillors elected. Before the local elections on May the 1st, the council was led by a minority Lib Dem and Green alliance. Green group leader Ian Middleton retained his spot on the county council after winning the Kidlington East division by 422 votes. Mr. Middleton said, "I think people now see the Greens as a credible force in the political landscape. We stand apart from other parties in that we focus on local, grassroots issues and are not obliged to follow rigid party political lines in the same way that other councillors are." Emily Kerr and Emma Barnett both won county council seats in Oxford, with Miss Kerr being elected to the newly created Bartlemas division and Miss Garnett being elected to the Parks division. Robin Jones was elected to Berinsfield and Garsington. Gavin McLaughlin won Benson and Cromarsh. Emma Markham won Shrevenham and James Barlow won Wallingford. After winning her seat by 732 votes, Ms Kerr said, "It's such an exciting time right up to the wire, and I'm really pleased that the people of Bartlemas have put their faith in me to take our policies forward. Environment is clearly a huge priority for us, as well as the inequality we see across Oxfordshire and within Oxford itself. We've seen the national government cut disability benefits and the winter fuel allowance. There's huge inequality within Oxford, and I think trying to change that where we can at local level is absolutely crucial. Then, of course, there's transport policy. I campaign a lot on safer streets, on improved transport, and giving people the choice to take the bus, walk and cycle and get around the city. I think being voted in on such a large margin shows that my constituents also care passionately about safer, cleaner transport." Ms Kerr is also an Oxford City Councillor who represents the St Mary's Ward. Green County Councillors Pete Sudbury, who was Deputy Leader and represented Wallingford, and Robin Bennett, who represented Berinsfield and Garsington, did not stand for re-election. The Conservatives saw a significant drop in their seat share, going from 19 councillors before the election to just 10, while Labour went from 14 to 12 councillors. Both Reform UK and the Independent Oxford Alliance won their first seat on the County Council.
Plans have been submitted to convert a vacant building into an apprentice skills centre. A planning application has been submitted to Cherwell District Council to convert 104 Churchill Road in Bicester into a construction skills training centre for Abingdon and Whitney College. According to the college's website, its apprenticeship provision is rated outstanding by Ofsted. Applicant Michael Chiasa of Abingdon and Whitley College said the unit, which is in a row of modern commercial units, would provide training for 20 apprentices in plumbing, property maintenance, electrical installation, carpentry and joinery. The building spans 976 square metres and is two stories at the front, with a large single-storey section behind. It's currently vacant. The application, validated on April the 1st, said it will be similar to the training centre at 126 Churchill Road, which was granted planning permission in April 2020. Having opened in 2021 with investment from the Oxfordshire Local Enterprise Partnership, the college's Bicester Construction Skills Centre is now at full capacity with more than 200 apprentices enrolled. It provides young people and adults with the skills needed to develop their careers and helps to address the skills shortage evident in the construction centre across Oxfordshire and the wider region. The proposed additional training centre at 104 Churchill Road will supplement that existing provision and will therefore provide additional support for the local and regional economy. Planning permission was granted to change the use of the building to a gymnasium, and that permission was implemented. Although planning permission was granted in 2018 to change the use of the unit back to a Class B1 office slash workshop, that permission was not implemented and the unit instead was used as a dance studio. This closed on March the 21st, 2025. Mr. Gilbert said the proposal will have a beneficial employment impact, with three members of staff employing on-site to supervise and train the students. 8 car parking spaces for staff and visitors will be provided in the yard at the back of the building, together with 12 bike parking spaces, including some covered spaces, considered ample provision for staff, visitors and students. No internal or external alterations are proposed to the building. No impact on the character or appearance of the area. The training activities will be contained in the building and will not involve the use of noisy machinery, with no impact on the amenity of nearby residents. Comments on the application are due by Tuesday, May the 20th, and a decision is expected by Tuesday, May the 27th. The college is also expanding full-time provision for 14 to 18-year-olds at the Abingdon and Whitney campuses, including a new T-level in planning, design and surveying.
National firm Zurich Engineering has launched its first programme in Oxford to help engineering surveyors return to work after a career break. The scheme, in partnership with STEM Returners, is also open to engineers wanting to transition into these roles. Roles are open to anyone with any length of career break on their CV. As well as Oxford, the programme is running at Zurich sites in London and Leicester and other locations across the UK. STEM Returners will source the candidates for a minimum of a 12-week paid placement and provide career coaching and mentoring. At the end of the programme, returners may be offered the opportunity to become permanent employees. Natalie Desti, director of STEM Returners, said, "There's a misconception that a career break leads to a deterioration of skills, but that could not be further from the truth. We know that recruitment bias against career break puts qualified and talented professionals at a disadvantage when applying for roles, and this needs to change."
VE Day celebrations now conjure up visions of tables groaning with food, but the original day would have presented party organisers with a few culinary challenges. Years of war might have ended, but food rationing meant real ingenuity was an essential ingredient for a successful celebration. One slim volume unearthed by the family of longtime Kidlington resident Pat Duffy, who died on April 2024, just a few weeks short of his 97th birthday, included recipes showing what could be done with very little. Possibly the star recipe in Good Fare in Wartime Education, Memo Number 3, the Board of Education 3rd, is patriotic pudding. This included 4 tablespoons of flour, 4 tablespoons of grated raw potato or fine oatmeal, 1 tablespoon of fat, 1/2 tablespoon of jam, treacle or syrup, and 1 grated carrot, 1/2 teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda, a pinch of salt, 2 teaspoons of grated orange or lemon rind, if available, milk and water to mix. Method 1. Rub the fat into the flour, add the rest of the dry ingredients and mix well. Add the jam and carrot, heated in 4 tablespoons of milk and mix to a soft mixture, adding more milk or water if necessary. Turn into a well-greased bowl, cover and steam for 1 hour. Method 2. Place jam and carrot in the bottom of a well-greased bowl. Make the mixture as above, mixing the dry ingredients with the milk only. Another offering is peace pudding. This uses 1/2 pound of split peas, 1 teaspoon of dripping, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 of a teaspoon of pepper, 1/4 of a teaspoon of fresh or dried mint. Another volume, the ABC of Cookery, published by His Majesty's Stationery Office at the princely price of 1 shilling, doesn't mince its words, making its intentions known on the opening line. This is not a recipe book. It is a book which explains cookery methods. Many thanks to my former Oxford Mail David Duffy for writing this story.
A former Oxford University student has returned three books 20 years after they were an undergraduate. The city's prestigious institution houses its fair share of libraries, and with them comes masses of books. Students come to Oxford each year to study in their thousands, loaning out books all year long to help aid their studies. However, three books in particular had not been located in the university's libraries for two decades. This specific trio were loaned out to an undergraduate student who unknowingly had hold of them since 2005. That was until they recently resurfaced, causing said anonymous former student to post them back to university along with an apology. The note read, "Dear librarian, upon sorting through some books and boxes, I discovered I had unintentionally been in possession of these three books since I was an undergraduate 20 years ago. Please forgive me." The University of Oxford stated online, "This note and three overdue library books from 20 years ago were delivered to the Lady Margaret Hall librarian last week. Better late than never." The trio of books included William Pierce's An Historical Introduction to the Marprelate Tracts.
The 40th anniversary of a popular children's book series will be celebrated at an Oxford museum. The Story Museum is unveiling a new exhibition in honour of Poppy and Sam, illustrated by Stephen Cartwright and written by Heather Amory. The series, which follows the adventures of Poppy, Sam and their animal companions on Appletree Farm, has been a staple in children's literature since 1985. In partnership with children's publisher Usborne, the museum aims to celebrate the series, which now includes picture, sticker, activity and cookery books, story collections, games and jigsaws. Much like the book series, visitors are invited to spot the little yellow duck, which appears on each page of the book around the Story Museum galleries. Poppy and Sam, 40 years of farmyard fun, will be viewable during weekends from May the 3rd to the 18th and daily throughout half term from May the 24th to June the 1st. The museum will also hold a Poppy and Sam storytelling event with Liz Frost on Tuesday, May the 27th at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. Conservationists are fighting to restore and expand the last remaining fragments of the UK's rare temperate rainforest as climate change looms. Wildlife experts described temperate rainforest, a globally rare habitat that once swathed western coasts of England, Wales, Scotland, the island of Ireland and the Isle of Man, as the jewel in the crown of the country's landscapes, but warned they're a pale shadow of their former selves. The area of Britain covered by these woodlands has shrunk from a fifth to just 1%, cleared for timber, commercial forestry and agriculture. They're now found only in fragments that face multiple threats.
With spring in full swing, Oxfordshire gardeners have been warned about two invasive species. National trade body Property Care Association has urged people to look out for Japanese knotweed and Himalayan balsam. Daniel Docking, technical manager at the Property Care Association, said, "We're at the start of the active season for invasive plant species, so it's the ideal time to identify any affected areas and put biosecurity or remediation plans in place." Japanese knotweed, introduced in the 19th century, can cause issues as its root system expands, especially near built structures. It can push up through hard surfaces such as car parks and driveways, while its rhizomes, a below-ground stem which spreads the root network, can interfere with underground infrastructure like drainage pipes, cabling and water pipes. Himalayan balsam favours moist, semi-shaded areas near slow-moving watercourses and wasteland where it will outcompete native plants. It can impact waterways by leaving riverbanks exposed to erosion following winter dieback or increase summer flooding due to constricted water flow. It spreads through self-settling seeds, but uprooted or cut plants can re-root or re-sprout from nodes on the stem.
Calls have been made for jurors to have access to specialist mental health support following a pilot at Oxford Crown Court. The British Psychological Society has raised concerns about the lack of psychological support for jurors who are exposed to distressing evidence, sometimes over several months. The call for nationwide support comes after a government pilot scheme in 14 Crown Courts, including Oxford Crown Court, concluded last month. The scheme offered 24/7 support and free counselling sessions to jurors in the most traumatic cases for the first time. Speaking ahead of Juror Appreciation Week, which will run from May the 6th to the 11th, Dr. Roman Ratchka, president of the British Psychological Society, said jurors and members of the public who've been required to join court proceedings from their everyday lives and who can potentially be exposed to material far beyond what they're used to seeing. Following our work to raise awareness of the lack of psychological support for jurors, the government pilot seen at Oxford Crown Court was a positive step in the right direction. We hope the support seen within the scheme will be rolled out nationally and look forward to the results in due course. Research from Manchester Metropolitan University found a fourfold increase in post-traumatic stress symptoms in jurors who had witnessed upsetting evidence. Within the study, 44% of participants were shown a murder case summary and evidence of skeletal remains reported signs of post-traumatic stress 7 days later. Jurors are currently signposted to their GP to access NHS talking therapies and the Samaritans should they experience distress or mental health difficulties following their jury service. However, with long waiting lists for NHS mental health services rising all the time, the British Psychological Society is urging the government to provide more efficient psychological support for jurors and a nationwide rollout of the pilot scheme. Dr. Ratchka said material jurors face could include graphic detail and images about extreme physical, sexual and emotional harm and further contextual information, which creates a strong potential for people to experience vicarious trauma. We must recognise the role and importance of jurors is recognised, and that includes recognising the potentially damaging mental health impact of being part of a jury during particularly distressing and traumatising cases. Ultimately, we want to see proper psychological support available during and after trials to ensure a better experience for all within the criminal justice system. One solution could be to replicate the model used in Scotland, where there's a dedicated counselling service for jurors.
A new theatre production will tackle one of the most personal and difficult decisions many parents face. The play, titled Making It Personal, explores the emotional journey of parents who have a child with a serious genetic condition and are deciding whether to have another child. Set against the backdrop of a breakthrough genetic test that assesses the risk of a genetic condition recurring in future pregnancies, it delves into the human side of this complex issue, focusing on how parents process the possibility of such a test and the tough decisions they have to make. The play depicts a day in the life of a couple, Jess and Sam, who already have a daughter, Evie, diagnosed with a rare genetic condition. The play will be staged at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May the 17th at St Anne's College, Oxford. Dr. Alison Kay, a research fellow at the Centre for Personalised Medicine and a researcher on the iPreg Care study, said, "After diagnosis, parents often want to know if their child's genetic condition is a one-off event or whether it could happen again. If you give them a low average risk of it happening again, they may not feel reassured because something rare has already happened to them." The play is a collaboration between scientists and arts fellows from the University of Oxford. Dr. Minna Jeffrey, research fellow in drama at St Anne's College, wrote and staged the production. She said, "I'm always excited by theatre as a tool to explore and communicate. Research can sometimes feel a bit intimidating and impersonal. So in this project, we're using theatre as a medium for considering the human, personal element and impacts of this vital, exciting research." The play is interactive, with the audience having the chance to participate in a group discussion after the performance. They can share their thoughts and suggest alternative ways the characters might have approached the situation. These alternative endings will then be reenacted on stage. Dr. Kay said, The performance is a springboard to engage the audience's rational and emotional responses and open up the conversation on how we as people grapple with new genetic information and what it means for ourselves and our relationships. The performance will be recorded and shared online, and further analysis, as well as the script and alternative endings, will be made available as a resource for future use via the Oxford Centre of Personalised Medicine's website. By stimulating conversations between researchers, healthcare professionals and the public, it hopes to improve the way new genetic technologies are discussed and applied in clinical settings across the country.
Football organisations could be forced to pay towards the care costs of ex-players who have suffered brain conditions caused by heading footballs under proposals to be tabled in Parliament. Campaigners are drafting amendments to the Football Governance Bill with the aim of treating it as an industrial injuries issue and overseeing a scheme to provide care and support for those affected. The proposals seek to require the industry, including the Football Association and Professional Footballers Association, to provide the necessary financial support amid concerns existing arrangements are not fit for purpose. The Brain Health Fund, set up with an initial £1 million in 2023 by the Professional Footballers Association Union with support from the Premier League, has been criticised by campaigners. The Premier League said the fund has supported 121 families with at-home adaptations and care home fees.
Atlassian Williams Racing announced a new multi-year partnership ahead of last weekend's Formula One Miami Grand Prix. Aria, an enterprise platform that helps organizations to manage AI solutions securely, will become the official AI orchestration partner for the Grove-based F1 team. Atlassian Williams Racing will use the Aria platform to connect teams to AI capabilities. This will allow for quicker access to knowledge and insights, as well as the creation of intelligent workflows and automation of complex tasks. The aim is to improve decision-making across technical and operational groups. Aria, which is headquartered in Atlanta, has chosen Williams for its first partnership in Formula One. The company is keen to expand its reach across global markets and sees the partnership as a reflection of its commitment to real-time decision-making, speed and reliability under pressure. Aria's branding will make its debut at the Miami Grand Prix, featured on the front wing end plates and halos of FW47 race cars driven by Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz, as well as on the side of the F1 Academy car driven by Lilia Block. James Vowles, team principal at Atlassian Williams Racing, said, "We're delighted that Aria has chosen to partner with Atlassian Williams Racing ahead of the Miami Grand Prix to help accelerate our transformation towards winning world championships. We're gathering real momentum as we invest in the right people, tools and cutting-edge technology to succeed and attract the right partners like Aria to help us deliver that success." Soren Charan, Chief Information and Analytics Officer at Atlassian Williams Racing, added, "Partnering with Aria is another key milestone in Atlassian Williams Racing's data and AI strategy. Their innovative AI orchestration platform and commitment to excellence, agility, and continuous improvement will help give us a competitive edge in a sport where every millisecond matters." Aria is the third major technology company to partner with Williams in 2025, following Atlassian in January and Brillio in March. John Marshall, CEO of Aria, said partnering with Atlassian Williams Racing represents a perfect alignment of vision. Formula One is the ultimate real-time, data-driven environment where victories are decided by thousandths of a second, and AI will be the next major competitive differentiator. Just as success on the track depends on speed, precision, and agility, enterprises across industries must embrace AI to win. We're excited to help Williams safely embed AI across their operations as they chase world championship success and to showcase how powerful AI orchestration can drive faster, smarter outcomes, both on the racetrack and across the global economy. A Didcot football club hosted a charity match which raised funds for vital homelessness support. The game pitted Team Connection Support against a team from Madison Lincoln at Didcot Town Football Club on April the 26th. Money from ticket sales was donated to Connection Support, which helps people across Buckinghamshire, Milton Keynes and Oxfordshire. This year, Connection Support marks 30 years of frontline work. But rather than celebrating, the milestone is a stark reminder of the rising need for crisis support. Demand has never been higher, proving that short-term solutions alone won't break the cycle. Whether it's providing hope to people in crisis or working to prevent homelessness before it begins, all money raised will help make a difference for those supported.
Runners in Oxford paid tribute to Sir Roger Bannister with the second annual celebration of his record-breaking sub-4-minute mile. On Bank Holiday Monday, the city hosted the Bannister Mile Celebration with a community mile along the High Street and 24 one-mile track races at the Iffley Road Athletics Track, with four men running under 4 minutes in the elite race. Three of them hailed from the Wirral, Salford and Preston. Just like Sir Roger on May the 6th, 1954, 25-year-old Joe Wigfield took a clear lead on the last lap and smashed through the tape in 3 minutes 56.64 seconds. Roger Bannister's record-breaking time at the running track on May the 6th, 1954 was 3 minutes 59.4 seconds. Sir Roger died in 2018, aged 88. Only a brisk northerly wind held Mr. Wigfield back from a track and British Milers Club record. Following closely behind were Jacob Kahn, Harry Wakefield and Tiernan Crawken, all running under 4 minutes. Tiernan becoming the first man to run twice under the 4 minute barrier at Iffley Road. Two Oxford University athletes in the elite race, Alex Gruen and Nicholas Whittaker, came through in 4 minutes 4.11 and 4 minutes 5.29. The track now boasts 8 sub-4-minute miles in 2 years, as many as were run in the previous 70 years. It was Cambridge's victory in the elite women's race as Holly Dixon of Cambridge Harriers crossed the line in 4 minutes 40.05 seconds, ahead of Hannah Cameron of Aberdeen. Almost 300 athletes took part, many achieving personal bests. The celebration included Paralympic-style races and the novel one-mile steeplechase. Thomas Renshaw, organiser of the event for the university's cross-country club, said, "The celebration goes from strength to strength. It's becoming a magnificent magnet for top milers. Men and women, from under-13s to veterans, come here to prove their worth early in the season." Well, the Community Mile was another massive success, with over 1,200 people running down the High Street and the ever-growing Family Wave a highlight of the morning's activities. The event was run in tandem with the British Milers Club, which has faithfully promoted competition at this distance for 62 years. The second annual Bannister Community Mile saw waves of runners sweep down the High Street and finish on Iffley Road, picking up finisher medals at the Sir Roger Bannister track. Chris Thompson, who represented GB in the 2020 Olympic Marathon, tooted the starting horn with his son Theo. One of Roger Bannister's great-grandchildren, six-year-old Saskia Townsend, ran in the family wave with her father, Barnaby Townsend. A former Oxford student who saw the original mile race, 92-year-old David Pixley, completed the mile too.
Przemyslaw Pracheta has warned next season will probably be tougher for Oxford United after he rescued a stoppage time leveller on the final day. The Ewes were already assured of Sky Bet Championship survival heading to Swansea City, and thanks to Pracheta's 93rd minute equaliser, were able to draw the season with a 3-3 draw. It was a fifth campaign in English football for Polish winger Placetta, who aside from one season in the Premier League with Norwich City, has played exclusively in the Championship. He said, "This is my fifth year already, and the Championship, I think, is one of the hardest leagues in the world. It's not that easy to play well all season because even some top teams have some bad moments as well. We know that it's always about staying positive and to try and win the next game. This is the championship. I think we can be happy because we did our job this season. Of course, the next season will probably be tougher and we will need to be ready for next season. Placetta added, it's a great time to score in the last game of the season against my previous club, so I'm pleased for that. It's good that we didn't lose the game. I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful that our fans came to this away game and supported us in the last game. Tyler Gordram played a great pass into my feet so I could take a touch and shoot, so I was very pleased for him. A new Indian restaurant has opened on Oxford's Cowley Road. Tender Coconut replaces the Greek Taverna, which had been running for 15 years, and joins a whole host of multicultural restaurants and businesses along the road. Since opening, owner Gilles José said it had been a joy to welcome guests and share the vibrant flavours of South Indian and Kerala cuisine with the Oxford community. I feel incredibly proud and excited, said Mr. José. Opening Tender Coconut has been a dream come true. The response so far has been heartwarming, and it's rewarding to see people enjoy the dishes and the atmosphere we've created. Mr. José said the restaurant brings a fresh, authentic taste on South Indian cuisine to Cowley Road, boasting Kerala specialities that are underrepresented in the area. Our goal is to offer not just food, but a cultural experience rooted in hospitality, tradition and community. He said, we hope to become a go-to spot for anyone craving warm, comforting and flavourful meals. Mr. José, who is the owner, described the venture as deeply personal and said he wants to ensure each guest feels at home. I'm committed to maintaining high standards of quality and service, he added.
Staff at a 101-bedroom boutique hotel in Oxford have been celebrating its first year. They were in celebratory mood at The Store on the corner of Broad Market Street and Corn Market Street, which marked its first anniversary. The hotel officially opened on May the 7th last year, and during the past 12 months, it's become one of the city's most talked about destinations for food, drink and culture. Housed in the former Boswell's department store, bosses say The Store has quickly established itself as a vibrant part of city life, known for its distinctive design, welcoming atmosphere and evolving programme of pop-ups and dining experiences. It's been an extraordinary first year, said Simon Drake, general manager of The Store. We've been welcomed with open arms by the local community and we're excited for what the future holds. Timed to coincide with the anniversary, The Store's rooftop bar and terrace has launched its summer season, now open from noon every Friday to Sunday and from 6 p.m. Tuesday to Thursday for drinks. With views of Oxford's Dreaming Spires skyline, the rooftop bar will now be serving a menu designed for relaxed summer weekend dining. Dishes include a smoked platter of ribs, Cajun chicken and beef sausage, alongside lighter options like crayfish roll, aubergine parmigiana and sweet corn riblets. A selection of cocktails, including mojitos, rounds out the offering.
Old car names will be taking the limelight at the last Scramble at Bicester Motion of 2025, organisers say. The last event of the year will take place on Sunday, October the 5th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The popular event is usually a sellout, and the event in October defined and reimagined cars with the Revived and the Revitalist. Expect the finest restomods, old names in new guises, and the type of revivalist designs that were all the rage at the turn of the century, a statement on the website says. Family entertainment will be provided by The Little Top, with more hands-on activities courtesy of Mini Landers and Reserve Rangers. Tickets went on sale on Sunday, the 27th of April, and can be purchased here, www.universe.com/events/scramble-tickets-2VM1C4,
or alternatively Google Scramble at Bicester of Motion.
A music teacher has shared the highlight of her role as she celebrates 20 years in the job. Alison Burbage, head of music at Aureus School in Didcot, was inspired to take up the profession after being taught by a number of inspirational teachers. She said watching successful music groups perform in public has been a highlight of her career. Looking back on her 20 years, Mrs. Burbage said, "I think the role of a teacher has changed to be more encompassing. You have to be aware of so many things in every single lesson and ensure you meet the needs of every student." Despite the challenges, Mrs. Burbage says staying motivated is not an issue. She says she thinks about all the students she's taught and how positive they've been when they see her outside school wanting to tell her what they've been doing. She added, "Seeing music groups that I've led performing in concerts both here and abroad has been very rewarding." Mrs. Burbage started her career at a school in Reading before joining Aureus School in 2021. Among the challenges she's faced over the last two decades have been the changes around what should be done in lessons and what the focus is. She said, "Learning all of the new terms and especially the acronyms can be challenging. I find it best to put the changes in when required and not overthink it, but to think about the benefit that those changes will have on those students." Mrs. Burbage said there's no single best moment in her career, but added, "I can't pinpoint one single moment, but seeing a student perform when they have at first said they couldn't, but then they work really hard to be able to perform, and the smile on their face when they realise they actually could, is really rewarding." The relationship between school and the students' families has also evolved, and now there's more contact between teachers and parents. Mrs. Burbage said, "I think that it's now more important than ever that students see teachers as human beings and they respect you more when they see you like this. I've had some really important exchanges with students who might have had a difficult few lessons, but then decide they are going to work hard and focus." Looking to the future, Mrs. Burbage believes the arts needs to be accessible for everyone and hopes her students will remember her for listening to them and being both understanding and passionate about her subject.
Primary school pupils have helped a group of residents at a Whitney retirement village to be active. The children from Windrush Primary School visited Richmond Village's Whitney to celebrate National On Your Feet Day. Held on April the 27th, the day encourages people to break up their sitting time and get moving. The pupils walked with the residents around the retirement village's bowling green and gardens. They also chatted with the residents along the walk and later enjoyed a picnic in the village's garden. Carla Sims, senior village advisor, said, "On Your Feet Day was a first for us, but it won't be the last. The children brought such energy and enthusiasm, and to see them chatting with the residents was wonderful to see. Our residents and staff have expressed how nice it was to get out, get moving, and chat to new faces, if not somewhat tiring, keeping up with the children's energy levels." A scout from Oxfordshire has attended a special event at Windsor Castle to receive a royal award. Catherine Lang was honoured with the King's Scout Award, the highest recognition in scouting for adventure and skill development, on April the 27th. Chief Scout Dwayne Fields was joined by Prince Edward, the Duke of Kent, who is joint president of the Scouts, in congratulating Miss Lang and the other award winners. Miss Lang said, "Scouting has got me through so many things, including lockdown, which was tough, but being able to still help with keeping scouting going online gave me a purpose and helped others stay connected. I sewed over 200 badges onto my camp blanket. That was just the beginning. Another highlight for me whilst getting my award was volunteering in Kandersteg Activity Centre in Switzerland. It reminded me why I love and started cooking. It brought it all full circle." This year marked Mr. Fields' first time attending the annual event in his role as Chief Scout and commemorated Prince Edward's 50th anniversary of involvement with the organisation. Scout ambassadors, including astronaut Tim Peake and Olympian Helen Glover, were also present to join in the celebration and cheer on these young people for their achievement. The award is presented for outstanding personal achievement and is given to scouts aged between 16 and 25. To earn the award, the young people must complete a range of challenges, including service to their community, an expedition in wild country, a five-day residential project in a new environment, developing an existing talent, or learning some new skills to build on what they've already learnt in the Scouts. The award also allows the young people to undertake projects which make an impact and lasting impression within their local communities. Mr. Fields said, "Congratulations to each and every one of you on receiving your King's Scout Award. This is an incredible achievement and it reflects all the hard work, dedication and passion you've put into your Scout journey. You've shown great leadership, made a real difference and embraced the true spirit of Scouts. This award is not only a recognition of all you've done, but also a reminder of the amazing things you're capable of in the future. I can't wait to see what's next for you. Keep looking forward and leading the way." The annual event at Windsor Castle has been held since 1934 on the Sunday closest to St George's Day to celebrate young people's growth. The Scouts said it's all about positivity, fun and celebration, and giving young people the chance to celebrate their journey alongside their peers.
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. This is 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available in our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk. where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.